Money FM 89.3, the best of Saturday mornings. International News Review.
Yes, indeed. It's International News Review time with Steve Okin of the McClarty Associates. Steve, Secretary of State Antony Blinken has been in the region talking all things Asia, China and the Philippines. What did you make of it?
Well, this is goes into the broader issue of what's happening in the region with a focus on the South China Sea. I mean, look, China claims basically the entire South China Sea, brushing aside competing claims from literally every Southeast Asian nation that has that has a coast on the South China Sea. International arbitration has ruled against China, yet China is basically claiming everything. And, you know, I was at a conference here in Singapore last week where a former Vietnamese official said that Vietnam is soon going to be a coastal country without access to the sea. And so what you see happening is the Philippines very publicly, very strongly pushing back on China's claim, saying we have control of this area that is within our, you know, within our territory. And these are not international waters. They're not Chinese waters. They're Philippine waters. China's becoming very aggressive there. And the U.S., through Secretary Blinken, is vowing ironclad support for the Philippines.
What is China's motive here, Steve? I mean, clearly these acts are antagonizing the region. They're antagonizing anyone around the South China Sea. And obviously, they're antagonizing the United States. China would know this. So why the aggression?
Well, I mean, China has clearly, in terms of defense and military, if it controls the South China Sea, if it is not international waters, then that makes what their foreign policy aims when it comes to certainly Taiwan, when it comes to the South China Sea more broadly, but certainly Taiwan, it becomes much more powerful. It is certainly a resource-rich area, and whoever controls the South China Sea, if you control the minerals under the seabed, then you have a great deal of access, especially when you're talking about the types of critical minerals that we're going to need in this century to address the climate risk. So they're making a calculation that they believe they have a claim, even though it has not been held up, and they have the force and the might to try and enact that claim. And they are now getting significant pushback that they've never seen before from a country, in particular the Philippines in this instance.
Now, Steve, you know, I like that you mentioned, you know, China like to gain dominance over in the South China Sea, but they also said that the U.S. should refrain or must refrain from stirring up trouble, and in fact called out Blinken's remarks as baselessly accusing China. But the fact is this, Blinken also said that the Mutual Defense Treaty was signed back in 1951. So what do you make of this comments between the both parties?
Well, I mean, this is typically what you can often see from China, is that it's foreign interference. It's, you know, when Lionel Messi didn't play, it was the black hand of the United States that kept Lionel Messi from playing in Hong Kong. Oh, it's not the Philippines that's standing up for its territorial rights. It's the U.S. using them as a pawn. So this is something that China will often say. Is it for an international audience? Is it for a Chinese domestic audience? But this is consistent, and this is why a lot of people are now saying, instead of focusing for potential conflict cross straits between China and Taiwan, that you have to look to the China and the Philippines, which may be a quicker flashpoint and something that we really need to be concerned about from a geopolitical perspective and from an economic perspective and a humanitarian perspective.
How would Singapore view these ongoing discussions or disagreements?
Well, typically what Singapore is saying is a couple of different things. One is Singapore always says, look, you have to respect international order. You have to respect a rules-based system. And the rules-based system is what allows a look, a small country, you could say a tiny country like Singapore, to have agency to do what it needs to do, to have the rights that it can have globally. And that is why you would imagine Singapore would always say, we need to follow the rules-based system. The rules-based system has said that China is overreaching in its claims. So that would be one. And then you also have, you know, all the governments in Southeast Asia, not just Singapore, saying, U.S., China, don't make us choose. We don't have to want to have to choose between the two of you. But when you get a conflict like this, and you get the Philippines very clearly saying the U.S. is protecting and enforcing our rights as a country, that gets you off of that we don't want to choose. You start to have to potentially choose, and that is going to be an issue that is going to become much more difficult for all governments in Southeast Asia, including Singapore, going forward.
Blinken, I was just going to add, Blinken moved on, obviously, to the Middle East, bit of a Asia-Pacific tour. Mm. What is he hoping to achieve? How would you rate his tour of the region and the Middle East?
Well, I mean, certainly if you looking at what the Biden approach is to foreign policy, it is we need to work with partners and allies. We need to support our partners and allies. We need to work with like-minded countries, and we need to respect the global rules-based order as it exists today. And so that is exactly what Secretary Blinken was doing in Southeast Asia and in Asia when he was in Korea before that. It's what he's trying to do in the Middle East, which is, look, you have to support Israel. You have to support their right to exist as a country. You have to support their right to protect themselves. But you also have to make sure that Israel is respective of other people's human rights, and that isn't happening right now. And so Secretary Blinken is trying to balance those two things, and it's getting more and more difficult with Israel's actions in Gaza right now. Mm.
Let's stay in the Middle East. This week, the Republic of Singapore's Air Force completed its first humanitarian airdrop to deliver emergency supplies to the war-stricken, horrific scenes around the Palestinian enclave of Gaza. What did you make of Singapore's intervention this week?
Well, I mean, it's one, of course, it's the right thing to do. And if you are a country and you can do it, you should be doing it. The U.S. is doing it. Jordan is doing it. Egypt is doing it. Germany is doing it. And now Singapore is doing it. So it's what you would expect of a country that has the resources from a military perspective to do the airdrops, to have the financial support to be able to do this for those people in need. So it's something that what Singapore is doing is consistent with what other countries are doing. It is also showing that Singapore is recognizing, as Minister Balakrishnan said, that Israel does have the right, of course, to exist as a country. It does have the right because there was a clear, flagrant, and heinous act of terror, as he said, to protect itself from what Hamas did in Israel. But it also has to show that it has to respect human rights. And Singapore is saying that they have a difference in Israel right now. And so this type of aid sends a signal of both of those things.
Well, Vivian Balakrishnan also mentioned that the fact that the Israelis' military response has simply just gone too far now. So do you think their approach to the Israel-Hamas war has changed over the course of this period?
Oh, I mean, I think it's changed because of what you've seen is Israeli reaction to the terrorist attack, the murder and rapes of over 1,000 Israelis from Hamas. And so, yes, Israel did have the right to respond. Now, the question is, is that response been justified and balanced as it's been carried out? Mm. And I think Singapore has said no. The United States is now saying no. And that Secretary Blinken told Prime Minister Netanyahu, so he met with him, Minister Balakrishnan met with Netanyahu, and Secretary Blinken said that Israel's place in the world is in peril, and they may not realize it until it's too late. And so, and that what Israel needs is a coherent plan, and they don't seem to have one right now. And if they don't get one, they're going to be stuck in Gaza for decades, and that cannot happen.
Yeah. It is interesting, though, isn't it, Steve? Because when the initial Hamas attacks happened, Singapore was very quick to come out, as they were with Ukraine, for obvious reasons, right? You cannot have incursions, attacks on independent sovereign nations. Singapore was very quick to come out on that. Now they're saying, as Dan pointed out, that they feel that Israeli military actions are going too far.
Yeah.
Does it feel like a turning point? It's not just Singapore, obviously. It's the EU, it's the UK, it's the US, it's other countries. Does it feel like a genuine global turning point?
If we're in, it's turning, and the question is, when will it have turned and you can't bring it back? And that's what the U.S. is trying to warn Israel about, as is Singapore. And what, you know, the State Department, the readout of that meeting that Blinken had with Netanyahu was that, look, the U.S. reaffirmed its commitment to Israel's security, to the lasting defeat of Hamas, but you need to protect civilians, and they're not doing the latter. Right now, Israel is not doing the latter. And so how do you get there? And if Israel ignores that you need to protect civilians in Gaza, and if it does go into famine, is it all you're getting these news reports, and you're going to get even more and more deaths of innocents in Gaza, in addition to those who are combatants, as is Hamas, it is going to turn. And I think that's the question, is when will that happen? And what Secretary Blinken, Secretary Balakrishnan, and others are saying to Israel, it is not in your interest for that to happen. Don't let it happen.
Yeah, hope and peace is something that we're looking forward to, and especially since it's been escalating so far. The United States have proposed a United Nations Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire tied to the release of the hostages in Gaza. But it had failed after Russia and China vetoed the draft. Now, if you remember just back then, it was Washington that had previously vetoed three of the prior UN resolutions calling for a ceasefire. So is this like a, you know what, since you did it previously, it's like a one-for-one?
Well, the situation's evolving as well. The language is very technical in there. So the question is, the UN can call for a ceasefire, but the ceasefire can only come with agreement of Israel and Hamas. The UN is not going to enforce that, but it will send a very strong signal to Israel that you better negotiate one. And it's also Israel's trying to put that pressure on Hamas that they negotiate one. Everybody thought was hopeful that this was going to come before Ramadan. It didn't. Hopefully it will come soon.
Watch this space, unfortunately. Okay, let's move on. Come back to home. Singapore. We're happy, Steve. We're happier than ever before.
Stop it, Neil.
In Singapore. And it's not just because of our show. Why are we so happy in Singapore, Steve?
Well, a slight caveat. It's not happier than it's ever been before because it went down in the rankings relatively this year.
Positive.
So Singapore is the happiest country in Asia for 2023 for the second consecutive year. Now, the report looks at six factors. And I think on three of them or four of them, Singapore does extraordinarily well, but it needs work in a couple of areas as you look at the scores. So when it comes to GDP, when it comes to life expectancy, when it comes to social support, when it comes to perception of corruption, I mean, Singapore, you know, crushes on those. But when it comes to freedom and when it comes to generosity, Singapore does not do so well. And that's why it ranks 30th as opposed to, you know, being one or two or in the top 10. So relatively speaking, does very well in Asia. Singapore knows this. It has its strengths. But I also think there's some warning lines in there because, and we can ask Dan this in particular, because when it comes to respondents below 30, Singapore is 54th.
Oh, that's a big drop.
Big drop. So it does very well with, you know, with those people who are older. And it, you know, in that key demographic of, let's say, 30 to 60, it does extremely well. 60 and up, it doesn't do great. And below 30, it has it's down to 54.
So what do you think, Dan? Over 60s, I can see that. The pressures of healthcare, being able to retire. Young people, I'm guessing property prices.
Exactly what we've mentioned so far. I mean, if you think of it this way, the people my age, the first few things we're thinking about is the cost of living, the rising cost of living. Our paycheck's not meeting inflation numbers. We're not able to afford, you know, the housing prices as well. I mean, call it public housing prices or public housing, but it's probably the cost of a private property probably about 10 years ago. So these kind of things do factor in as we take a look at our mental health. And mental health, especially for those, I believe, 30 and below, is starting to be more prevalent in our day and age, especially since people are thinking more about what they want to prioritize in their health and their needs. And I don't think that this could speak for most of us here, but perhaps maybe 30 to 64, the fact that they've already laid out quite a number of things in their life might support this idea.
Well, that's the Singaporean perspective. Let's get the US perspective, because the US are more miserable than ever. They have dropped out of the top 20 for the first time in the 12-year history of the report. They're now down to 23rd. Why?
I think what Dan lays out for Singapore is true of the US as well. And I mean, if you look at where the Singapore didn't do so well, it was in perceived social support, freedom to make life choices, and generosity. And I think if you look at the U.S., we're going down in perceived social support, I would imagine for sure. I didn't look at the U.S. numbers. I mean, it's the generosity is certainly going down. It's the inability to be able to buy a house for the first time. It's becoming more and more difficult. It's student loan debt. So it's all of those things is dragging the U.S. down, you know, relatively speaking. I mean, to be below the, out of the top 20 for the U.S. is a first. And, you know, it's a real challenge that, that both countries, I think, face. And income inequality is a big part of that.
Yeah. All right, let's bring the mood up then and finish with Swiftonomics is back. Just when you thought it was safe to go back into a radio station, Taylor Swift is in the news indirectly because of the impact of Swiftonomics striking Singapore and the region again with a completely different rock band.
Now, if Dan did not know who Bob Dylan was, I cannot imagine he ever heard of Deep Purple either.
I heard of the song, and I just realized it's actually by Deep Purple last night.
And what's the song?
But I told him, right? I don't know any of the lyrics to the song. Just the tune.
Total Guitar ranked that song's riff number 4 on its greatest guitar riffs ever. It is Smoke on the Water. And so this is a band, we want to talk about age demographics. This is a band who is in the Joe Biden, Donald Trump age demographic.
But hey, don't insult our listeners. Deep Purple are huge in Singapore.
Let's see how old
Roger Glover is. I've already looked it up, Dan. 78. He is. Wow. They're 78. They're in the Biden Trump age demographic. 78. They did their long goodbye tour. Ended 5 years ago.
They're touring here. You haven't
exactly.
Said.
No, they're touring here in 2024. So 5 years after the long goodbye tour ended, they are going to be in Singapore performing in Fort Canning Park on May 1st. And so it is astounding in a way,
honestly,
that they're still touring.
Yeah.
What's even more astounding is that Malaysia is jealous of this.
Again, because it's the only stop in Asia that Deep Purple are doing here in Singapore. We've done it again. We did it with Coldplay. We did it with Taylor Swift. But this is even worse in some ways. It's their only Asian stop, Steve.
And so you, for the promotional materials for the concert, the promoter was advertising in Malaysia. It says, "Attention all Malaysian rock fans."
Wow.
"You can only see Deep Purple in Singapore."
Yes.
Oh, no.
Which triggered, of course, the social media outrage.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a second. Okay, it's bad enough. Kind of understandable, but bad enough we lost Taylor Swift to Singapore. We can't get these geriatrics to come to our country. If we can't get them, we're getting nobody.
And they are a staple in Malaysia and Southeast Asia. They are mutt rock legends. They are a staple in the region. But a more serious point-ish, Steve, is just testament again to Singapore and the pull factors of why bands want to come here.
And I will tell you, next year, Singapore is going to crack that top 20 globally in happiest places because it's the Taylor Swift Deep Purple effect, right? And so it's like, you know, why is it that Taylor Swift comes here? Why is it that Deep Purple comes here? And there was an article that said maybe because Singapore is boring, you know, and that's why it gets everybody, right? There's, you know, no crime.
Yeah. Precise,
it's
yeah.
orderly. It's safe. It's secure.
True, yeah. Yeah.
It's got a lot of money. So it attracts everybody. And so then the question is, will Taylor Swift and Deep Purple make Singapore less boring?
Absolutely. Ooh. Well, we make it less boring on this show. As always, Steve, thank you very much for coming in.
Always to have the three of us back together, even though Dan the Man did not wear the uniform today.
Thanks, Steve.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.